This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Retired Army Lieutenant Colonel John Nagel helped rewrite the field manual on counterinsurgency in Iraq, one of the factors credited for improvements there. In the latest issue of Foreign Policy magazine, Nagel co-authored a new version of the manual called Counterinsurgency Field Manual Afghanistan Edition. Amid talk of doubling the American troop level in Afghanistan, John Nagel joins us to explain why he thinks that a surge alone will not be enough, why we might have to accept increased American casualties, and why some of our best weapons don't shoot. If you served in the military in Afghanistan or worked as a contractor there, what can we do to stem the tide of the Taliban? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can always join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Lieutenant Colonel Nagel is a senior fellow at the Center for New American Security in Washington. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
It's good to be back, Neil.
And one of the things you immediately point out in this article, Iraq is not Afghanistan. Afghanistan is not Iraq.
In fact, Afghanistan is harder than Iraq. Afghanistan is a bigger country. It's a more populous country. It has very serious ethnic divisions, very, very difficult terrain. When you fly over it in a helicopter, as I did in November, it is almost unbelievable that people could eke a living out of that land. And perhaps most importantly, it shares a border with Pakistan, one of the world's most dangerous, least stable countries, a nuclear-armed country, and the base not just of Al-Qaeda, but also of a lot of the Taliban who come across the border to fight us there in Afghanistan.
So fundamentally a rural conflict, whereas Afghanistan was in large part an urban conflict.
That's correct. And in some ways, it's even harder fighting a rural counterinsurgency campaign because the people aren't compact in ways that you can control a large number of people, or at least control access to areas for a large number of people with fairly small numbers of troops. So the number of troops required in Afghanistan is going to have to be far larger than the number of troops we've deployed there to date.
And they're talking, there's about 30,000 American forces there. Now they're talking about doubling it. Do you think that's going to be in the ballpark?
No, it's not anywhere near enough, but it is absolutely the most we can do while trying to maintain stability in Iraq, which we've just purchased at such a very high price. The long-term answer for success in Afghanistan has to be Afghan troops providing security to the Afghan people. The biggest mistake we've made in Afghanistan, I think, is limiting the growth of the Afghan army, not to the number of troops needed to secure Afghanistan, but to the number of troops Afghanistan could afford to pay. And we're in grave danger right now of, as a result of those decisions, having an army that is unable to secure the people of Afghanistan and that we aren't able to grow large enough in time to push back the Taliban.
We want to hear today from people who have served in Afghanistan as, primarily with the military, but also as contractors. Give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And our guest is retired Lieutenant Colonel John Nagel. One of the things you talk about, one of the tactics that was adopted in Iraq, you urge should be adopted again in Afghanistan, and that's to put units out with the people. Don't bring them back into bases every night. This was something that was used in Iraq to effect, but in Iraq, it also was the cause of greater casualties.
That's correct. So when troops are gathered together in large forward operating bases, big super FOBs, we call them, they're very safe, but they aren't able to provide security to the population. And from those super FOBs, often we commuted to war. We would drive out to the war. We did war tourism, did a patrol, drove back to the forward operating base. And it was like sticking your hand, your fist, into a bucket of water. When you pulled your fist out of the bucket of water, you couldn't tell that you'd done anything. And when we pulled out, the insurgents returned to power and returned to control. And the way we broke the cycle, broke the strength of the insurgency in Iraq, was by putting American troops in conjunction with Iraqi troops in 76 joint security stations spread throughout Baghdad that provided oil spots of security that then spread and created a pocket of security in Baghdad, which is now remarkably more than 80% decrease in violence over the past 2 years in Baghdad as a result of this tactic of protecting the population. It's the same strategy we have to follow in Afghanistan, but we simply don't have enough troops available. Even when we double American troops in Afghanistan, there will still be fewer troops at the end of that doubling, fewer than half the number of troops at the end of that doubling that there are right now in Iraq.
And how many troops do you think you're going to need in Afghanistan to make this strategy work?
So according to the Army Marine Corps counterinsurgency field manual, it takes 20 to 25 counterinsurgents for every 1,000 people in the population. That's about 600,000 troops for all of Afghanistan. And
that's not going to happen.
And that can happen, but those aren't going to be American boots. So the Afghan army right now is about 70,000. We've decided to double it. Finally, we've decided to double it. It's my belief that we're going to have to double it again. When you get the Afghan army north of 200,000, when you get the Afghan police north of 200,000, with about 100,000 Americans and perhaps 100,000 Europeans on the ground, Europeans and other internationals on the ground, at that point, the insurgency will truly be in its last throes.
Commander General David Petraeus, who played such an important part in Iraq, is now the CENTCOM commander. Afghanistan is within his ambit as well, and he has said many of the same things about Afghanistan that he said about Iraq. We cannot capture or kill our way out of this problem.
That's exactly right. So the dynamics that drive people to become an insurgent are deprivation, poverty, nationalism, feelings of oppression. You have to solve those underlying problems and give them a stake in the society, or if you manage to capture or kill them, literally their brothers will rise up to fight you again. So the key to success in a counterinsurgency campaign is providing the people what they need, first security, and then an opportunity for a better life. And this is why economic development and good governance, creating a government that is responsive to the people, that doesn't take bribes, that meets the needs of the people, is so important in any counterinsurgency campaign.
Well,
I spent about 3 hours with General McKiernan, the commander for Afghanistan, General Petraeus' subordinate, and he outlined a very good strategy in November that had both economics and governance as well as security as part of his strategy. The problem was he simply doesn't have the resources to implement that strategy right now.
You've said work with a government that doesn't take bribes. The one in Afghanistan now takes bribes. It's a government we installed. At what point do you say, wait a minute, we're not going to work with these people. They're corrupt, because they seem to be all corrupt.
The good news is that fortuitously, there's a national election scheduled for Afghanistan for later this year. The current government of President Karzai, will either be renewed in office, and I believe it will only be reelected if it makes substantial changes in how it governs the country over the course of 2009. Otherwise, the democratic process will throw the bums out, and we'll have a new government in Afghanistan to work with. So either way, the pressures of that election, the September election coming up, are going to drive change in how Afghanistan is governed over the course of this year.
Retired Lieutenant Colonel John Nagel is our guest. We're talking about the new field manual for tactics in Afghanistan, 800-989-8255, if you served over there. Jerry's on the line with us from Honolulu. Jerry.
Hello?
Yeah, Jerry, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah,
Jerry.
Thanks. Hey, I've enjoyed listening to the show so far, and most things I'm in agreement with. I commanded a provincial reconstruction team in Ghazni province.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Anyway.
If you turn down the radio, life is easier.
One of the things I saw over there, and I agree with you on, is the corruption. We worked with the police over there for the in the rural districts of Ghazni province, and trying to get the guys equipped and trained was a major challenge. And as we gave them equipment, oftentimes their chiefs would take it away from them and try and sell them on the market out there. So we had to keep our eyes on them very closely. And that was 3 years ago. I haven't heard much back from Ghazni back since that time, but I imagine it's still similar.
Let me read you a quote from the article in Foreign Policy magazine that John Nagel helped write. As tribal elders in Ghazni province recently said, they feel slapped on one cheek by the government and on the other cheek by the Taliban. Does that describe the situation as far as you knew it?
Well, in some ways. I don't want to go into names, but when I was there, it was very much a warlord-run province. The warlord happened to be our buddy. As long as he took care of our interest, we took care of him. And as it progress, he moved on to bigger and better things. And, you know, in that country, that's the norm. I mean, we can't criticize it too much because it did lead to some stability. But he went in and he made sure people were doing what he wanted to do. And when he wasn't in that area, actually took away his militia from him as part of a, you know, DDR process. And as a result, the Taliban came in and burned down the, you know, district center and destroyed a lot of stuff there. So it was, you know, it worked both ways. I mean, you couldn't have it the way we wanted it in an ideal situation. And we were trying to effect change, and we did gradually. Everything from getting, as you talked about, the symptoms that cause counterinsurgency, like, you know, poverty. We had a Department of Agriculture advisor. We were out, bought like 50,000 fruit tree saplings to go plant in one of the districts, actually in several of the districts out there, along with giving out wheat seed that we bought with SERP money to try and get the Taliban guys back in the field so they would have something to do other than try and shoot at us.
Yeah. John Nagel?
Jerry, you're a great American.
And
boy, I feel your pain on training the police force. I had all the same problems, and I was training police in Al Anbar province of Iraq back in 2004, about the same time you were. I actually spent the last 2 days at the University of Tennessee in Chattanooga, and my host was a young captain who did the same thing you did 2 years later. He worked with the Afghan police, and he's made some progress since then, but we still have a long, long way to go. And police are very important. They are the first line of defense against insurgents, and they are
Absolutely.
The public face of the government to the people. But I also want to compliment you for what you did in terms of economic development and the fruit trees and the better wheat. And this shows that a whole-of-government effort is required. This isn't just a military fight. We need the State Department, and we need the Department of Agriculture. There's an expeditionary imperative to get those guys over there helping build a better future for these people, to wean them away one by one away from the Taliban.
Jerry? Absolutely.
You know, thank you. Appreciate the compliments. But there are many guys doing this. And I just want to say a couple things. First off, we're reinventing the wheel. We had something like this called CORDS during Vietnam, Civil Operations and Revolutionary Development. And it started going very well before we pulled the plug, popped smoke, and headed out of Vietnam. Well, when we went to Afghanistan, we basically were trying to reinvent the wheel because nobody could say the V word, and that there was this good thing called CORDS, and let's look at it and see how much we can use out of it, which my Department of State advisor and myself looked at it, and we said, hey, here is a model for the most part what we're doing here in Afghanistan. But when we talked to anybody with stars, they kind of looked at a hog staring at a wristwatch, and they maybe had heard somewhere about CORDS, but really didn't know what it was. I had a former Secretary of the Army come visit us in Ghazni, and he'd been talking to the CFC Alpha Commander and mentioning CORDS, and he could tell the guy had no idea what he was talking about.
Jerry, I got to tell you.
Secretary of the Army under President Ford, so...
I got to tell you, Jerry, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And the story of counterinsurgency, both in Iraq and Afghanistan, has been relearning lessons that we knew but intentionally forgot.
Jerry, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Hey, pleasure. Take care.
We're talking about the Field Manual for Afghanistan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go talk with Lou. And Lou's with us from Fort Knox.
Hello.
Hi, Lou. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Actually, the point that I was going to make the speaker covered since I was listening, when he hit on the State Department, Department of Agriculture, the number, he was exactly right. The number of troops, if you're going to follow the book, are way short. And what's needed is just like he said, not like Iraq where you go back to the FOB every day. It's staying out. When we were there, you know, we slept out with our... ANA counterparts for weeks at a time.
That's Afghan National Army. Yep.
But I mean, you can make do with what you got. Like the area that my platoon had, you know, was probably a company or battalion sized level or area. But we, you know, we covered it the way we, you know, we could. But the emphasis shouldn't. I'm not going to say shouldn't, but there should be more emphasis on exactly what the speaker. Was talking about State and Department of Agriculture, because any village we went into, no matter who we talked to, no matter what tribe they were from, no matter if they were Taliban supporter, government supporter, whoever, they all said the same thing. They don't trust the government. They don't trust their local government. They don't trust their provincial government. They don't trust their national government.
Lou, I agree with you completely. And I got to tell you, this is a case where we really need the people of America to tell their senators and their representatives, you know, we love our Army. We love our Marines. But we also love our State Department and our Department of Agriculture. And the Army, the guys in uniform like you, Lou, have to come out and say, hey, these guys are just as important in this kind of war we're fighting today. Dollars are bullets, and seeds are bullets, and fruit trees are bullets, and a good government is a bullet in the war against the Taliban and al-Qaeda.
Lou, thanks very much.
I appreciate it, guys.
All right, bye-bye. I wanted to ask you also, you write, the roads are the single most important path to success in Afghanistan. Why is that?
I was flying over the mountains of Afghanistan with a brigadier general in November. And he was very proud, pointing to road construction under the helicopter, and we hit the end of the road construction. And he said, where the road ends, the Taliban begins. Roads are how governments exert control in that incredibly mountainous territory. The first thing the Romans did when they faced insurgency in a province was build a road there so that they could move troops there quickly. And we have really not done the job we need to do in Afghanistan of building roads, providing the infrastructure that will give farmers an opportunity to ship goods to market, that will allow industry to grow, to provide an alternative to opium, and opium, frankly, feeds the insurgency.
And tell me the story about the Afghan road builder you met.
So it was actually Nate Fick, my partner in crime, who met an Afghan road builder. And the man had been ambushed by the Taliban the previous day. And when Nate came upon him, the man was still wearing the bloody shirt that he'd been shot in the previous day. But he had come back on the job the next day, protected by Afghans and Americans, because he knew that roads were that important to the future of his country. So the dedication of the Afghan people to building a better life is extraordinary. The suffering they've gone through is almost unbelievable over 30 years of war. And frankly, we, the United States, for all the sacrifices we've made in Iraq, we and those who've served in Afghanistan have made huge sacrifices as well, but it has not been a priority war for the United States to date. It has to be if we're going to win.
John Nagel, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Lieutenant Colonel retired John Nagel, senior fellow at the Center for New American Security in Washington. We have a link to his article in Foreign Policy at npr.org/talk, and he was with us here in Studio 3A. Tomorrow, cries of bias in news coverage of President Obama. Already, how do you want the media to cover the new president? We'll hope you'll join us for that tomorrow on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.